Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, you're listening to Core Dialogues Radio, presented by ID Group, where thought-provoking conversation and thought leaders meet on air. Every Thursday at 4 p.m., we hit the airwaves with forward-thinking ideas, philosophies, and questions, connecting our listeners to ideas that will get you thinking. The answers are in our studio. Now, here's your host and whole systems branding expert, Dr. Mona.
Welcome, everyone, to today's edition of Core Dialogues Radio. We're streaming live from the Business Radio studios here in beautiful downtown Pensacola, Florida. I'm your host, Mona Amadeo, and every Thursday at 4 o'clock Central, you can connect with us here at Core Dialogues at businessradiox.com, where we gather each week to connect you with some really, really interesting people with ideas that I hope will inspire you, challenge you, and motivate you. Just some really great conversations we've had over the last several weeks. And I have to tell you, this is one of the ones I'm particularly looking forward to, because today we're talking with Wendy Steele. And Wendy, I think a really interesting way to describe Wendy is that she's someone who's responsible for starting an epidemic. But the good news is it's a good kind of epidemic. It's an epidemic of generosity, as she describes it, that has literally impacted hundreds and thousands of people across the country and the world. And I think an amazing lady that took an idea. You know, we talk a lot here about ideas. We talk a lot about what sparks ideas, and how do we really impact the world through the ideas. And Wendy is certainly a great example of a single idea that really has turned into what she describes, and I love the description, as an epidemic, that epidemic of generosity. So Wendy is the founder of Generosity Matters, and I like to describe her as the mother of Impact 100, which we're going to be talking about today. She really understands the impact of generosity, and she's been encouraging philanthropy really most of her adult life. And her mantra is on her website, and I really, really love this: when everyone gives, the world benefits. And I think that is such a powerful, powerful thought. And also, I think through the work she continues to do beyond Impact 100, she's showing that, yes, everybody gives, the world benefits, but so do individuals, and so can business. So I think there are some really interesting themes here and stories that I'm looking forward for Wendy to share with us today. So, you know, she believes that there is really two kinds of people in the world. And again, she has got so many little nuggets here. Those who see the needs in this world and realize they can be a part of the solution, and those who still need to be invited to the party, which is a great way to think about this. And what's so cool is that in 2001, she literally took this idea, this philosophy, that people need to be invited to the party, and it makes a difference for us to invite them to the party. And she took that idea and shared it with a group of women in her hometown, her then hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, and really started to design an idea where more people, specifically women, could be invited to that party. And her idea was very simply to create a pass-through foundation that would provide transformational grants to not-for-profits to help them tackle some of society's biggest problems. And while those were challenging, I'm sure, in 2001, as we all know today, our society faces many, many, many problems. And these not-for-profits are sometimes the heart and the soul of the community, who are really tackling issues that are too big for one person, one group, and even the government. So these ideas were the seeds of what today is Impact 100. When the idea was born, you know, the question is spreading those ideas. And I think probably one of the pivotal moments, she'll share this a little bit more with us in a moment, but I imagine the People magazine article that was written in 2004 that featured Impact 100 and Wendy, I think was probably the beginning of a big epidemic. The news spread and models were created that emulated the impact model that they began in Cincinnati. And as we say, the rest is history. So Wendy, welcome to Core Dialogues. We're just so excited that you're here and excited for you to kind of tell your story and find out a little bit about what maybe we can learn from your experiences as the person who started an epidemic. So welcome, Wendy.
Oh my gosh, Mona, thank you so much, and thank you for that kind and warm introduction. I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, I think a really good way for us to start out, of course, I have to tell you, I know Wendy and of Wendy because I'm a member of the Impact 100 group here in Pensacola, Florida, and I can certainly tell you the Impact, great name that the organization here in Pensacola has, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But Wendy, just to get us started, just to get everybody on the same page, tell us a little bit about Impact 100. It's an amazing story, and I'm just really curious as to where that idea came from. How did you birth this?
Oh my gosh. You know, the idea came sort of all at once, and yet it was a culmination of circumstances that I had been struggling with for quite a while. You see, I grew up in a family that got involved and gave back, not because we had so much, but because it was, as I was taught, the right thing to do, to leave a place a little better than you found it. And so when I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, where there were plenty of jobs and women who were working great jobs, or they might have been stay-at-home moms, but seemingly with plenty of resources, and I would invite them to join me in whatever community project I was working on, the women had a lot of very valid reasons why they couldn't come alongside. You know, they didn't budget to spend their hours volunteering as a stay-at-home mom, so they couldn't justify paying a sitter $10 an hour while they went out and helped others. Or perhaps they traveled for their work, so they couldn't make regular meetings. In some cases, they just didn't see themselves that way. They didn't recognize that they could do something that would make a difference. They thought the problems were so big and the needs were so great that what would their small contribution really mean? And when do we really know when those get spent? And so I was on vacation with my children that summer. It was the summer of 2001. And these ideas were troubling to me. And I knew that there had to be a solution. And I knew that we needed to do something because the community needed these women. And I also felt that the women needed to become involved. And at the exact same time, I was fortunate to serve on a couple of boards of nonprofits. And I was hearing over and over again the struggle that nonprofits have to get significant grant dollars. Don't misunderstand, they're very grateful when they get those small grants of $5,000, $10,000, even $15,000. It's like manna from heaven. It feeds them for today, but tomorrow they've got to be out gathering again. So they were grateful. But it was very difficult for them to find a grant that would be really transformational, that would allow them to lift their head off their desk, look to the horizon, and really execute on their strategic plan or on that program to serve the community that needed them. So I literally, with a spiral notebook and a pen, I started to piece those puzzle pieces together. And that is what became Impact 100. I systematically overcame every objection that I had heard from women over the past several years and designed Impact 100 so that if you don't want to get involved, don't have the time or the opportunity or the inclination, you had no requirement of time commitment. Of course, we encourage commitment, but there are many women who join Impact 100 and they really don't have the opportunity to give anything more than a check. And that check is meaningful. Every member of Impact 100 gives $1,000. And that $1,000 gets joined together so that every increment of 100 women, we give away another grant. Because the minimum grant size for Impact 100 is $100,000. But this organization was not meant to just address problems related to women directly. Impact 100 has 5 focus areas that are broadly environment, education, health and wellness, family, and culture. The idea being that there would not be a nonprofit in the community that wouldn't qualify under one of those areas. So what happened as I was building it is the first idea is to bring together as many women as we could who would believe in this. And so when we got to over 100 members, we knew that we were ready to launch. So that first year, we had 123 members, and we were ready to give away one grant of $123,000. And we sought applications from those nonprofits in what was the 10-county region of Greater Cincinnati. In those five focus areas, we got well over 125 grant applications. And our focus area committees went about the idea of vetting those grant applications and coming up with a finalist. And then all of the members were invited to an annual celebration where those finalists would present and our members would have a chance to ask them questions, to cast their ballot, and ultimately choose who would become the grant recipient.
And that's quite an event.
Oh my gosh, is it ever? Yeah, that is. It's a life-changing event for, I think, everyone who's there. It's really phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is. It's such a great concept of, you know, you had an issue of, and I think what you've described, that was a situation in 2001 is probably even more so today, the speed at which we live, the complexities of life. And on the other side, the very real challenges that these not-for-profits have. I think, again, 2001, absolutely. And then here we are in 2016 with it's probably multiplied, you know, threefold with that complexity. And certainly the idea of collectively, I think, you know, the concept that you just shared of, you know, the problems are so huge, that the challenges are so big. What can I do? And I think what Impact 100 does is it gives women an opportunity to be a part of something bigger, to contribute, as you said, in any way they can, and then for the community to benefit from that. You know, as you looked at how you turned this into action, you know, you sort of shared, you know, the process, and that's still the process, at least here in Pensacola. But, you know, what were some of the challenges you had as you looked at, okay, I have this idea, and the way I'm understanding it is you shared it with a group of friends there in your hometown. But what were some of the, were there obstacles, or did everybody just listen to you and go, oh, yeah, we're on board? What did you do to move this from, as you said, the spiral notebook to making it a manifestation of your philosophy?
Well, and that's a great question. So remember, the idea came in the summer of 2001. And when I left that vacation and came home to Cincinnati to get the kids in school and so forth, you know, get busy with that stage of the calendar, 9/11 happened. And everything was really put on pause, and for lots of good reason. What I had done over that summer, however, in that same spiral notebook, is I had written a list of women who I thought would be interested in this as a concept, and who I also thought would have the ability to get involved. So the interest and the ability. And then I went back and I put stars next to the names of the women who had skills that I didn't have. You know, people often say that when I started Impact 100, I invited a group of friends, and actually I didn't. I invited acquaintances and people I admired, people who had skills that I didn't have. And to me, that's one of the most valuable lessons whenever I'm talking to someone about building a board for any organization or even building an organization, is to surround yourself with people who know things that you don't know and believe things a little differently. They see the world differently than you do, because that's where the magic happens. That's when really good ideas can become great ideas, and when transformation starts to happen. Because bear in mind, you know, in 2016, people look at Wendy Steele and say, oh my gosh, she was so smart, or she was this or that. But in 2001 and 2002, you know, I had never done the traditional things that leaders in the community do. So in other words, I'd never been the president of the Junior League, and I had never, you know, there were lots of things. I had never looked at a grant application. So I surrounded myself with people who had done that, who had led significant nonprofit organizations, who had been both on the grant writing side and on the grant review side, who were really good at marketing and who were good at accounting and who were good at database management. And those are the people that I vetted the concept with first. And in some cases, they would say, well, gosh, I think this is interesting, but I can't help you right now. You know, I'm not in that season of life, but gosh, you should talk to Sarah or Sally or Jane. And so I ended up meeting women that I had never met before based on the recommendation of someone else. And that initial group, we gathered in November after 9/11. Wow. And decided, do we move forward or not? And then the conclusion that evening was, if not now, then when? And if not us, then who? The time is now. And so we made the decision in November. We got our 501c3 designation, our nonprofit status, by March. And by May, we had 123 women who had given their checks. So the challenges were, at that time, getting anyone to pay attention in the media. And it's funny because you alluded to the People Magazine article. But in the beginning, I couldn't get any local coverage. It was very difficult to spread the word. It was all done grassroots, one-on-one, calling people. Interestingly, I would say the reaction was really positive. To me, it makes, you know, Impact 100 is a very simple idea. And so it's easy to explain. It's easy to understand. And I think people got it. And I think that it was an exciting time. Now, there were plenty of people, I'm sure, who were not on board or who didn't think it was a great idea. But we sort of, I guess we just didn't hear them when
you didn't need
they
them, said, right? You didn't need everyone. So, you didn't need everyone. You just needed a group.
You know, you focus on the ones who are really interested, and so that part of it has been amazing. Yeah. And then the nonprofits came out in spades. I mean, they were. I thought going into the process, because I was very active in the community, I thought, gosh, you know, I'll probably know all the grant applications. You know, I'll probably be familiar with all of these organizations that come through. And I really wasn't. You just don't realize how much you don't know until you start to go through this process. And so it was a steep learning curve and a fabulously fun learning curve. But yeah, there were definitely hiccups and challenges along the way. But more than that, it was a wonderful way to meet new people and to watch us all together make the changes that need to be made in our community.
Yeah, it's very powerful. You know, it's so interesting. I was just listening to you as you're describing the way that you started Impact 100, you know, just your process. And, you know, we could probably draw parallels to extremely good business practices that are also associated with other kinds of organizational startups. You know, the idea of a simple idea, you know, your ability. And really it is, Wendy. I mean, when you, it's like, duh. of course it is, you know. And it's just, and it's so funny because, you know, when I was approached to be a member of this, I went, well, yeah, that's a no-brainer. You mean I can be a part of giving $100,000 to a not-for-profit? I can do that individually. But boy, that's pretty powerful if I can be a part of that, you know. So I think that idea is just extremely, you know, extremely powerful as it must be, because it's. I know here in Pensacola, I think there's like, it's like 7 million. I can't remember how large of that money that has been given to our community and the.
I think you're north of 10 million. Actually,
are we? Yeah. Yeah, so it's just an amazing, an amazing idea that absolutely. And before I move to my kind of next kind of thoughts, so people can still start organizations, Impact 100 organizations, is that right? And you guys, there's some guiding principles of, you know, of what you're doing.
Yeah. So as I described earlier, you know, the model was created, or Impact 100, because at the time I didn't think I was creating a model that was going to be replicated. I thought I was simply creating Impact 100. And so the Impact 100 model was designed with very specific things in mind. We wanted it to be very inclusive, both of all the nonprofits in that defined regional area, but also the women. You know, if you look across the United States right now, there are actually 32 active impact organizations, and there are another dozen that are in startups. So we're still growing. In fact, we're growing faster now than we were back in 2003 and 4 when Pensacola was getting started. And so the model has very specific elements to it, and they're that way for very specific reasons. But in some communities, that model doesn't necessarily fit their demographic, or it doesn't fit the needs of the nonprofit. So, for example, in Indian River, Florida, Vero Beach, there's an impact organization, and the majority of their members are snowbirds. They're only in that part of Florida for a small amount of time. And so Vero Beach does this very condensed calendar, really, really condensed calendar. I believe they recruit their members, ask for applications from the nonprofits, vet the applications they get, and give away their grants, all within something like 3 months. I mean, it's crazy.
Knowing the process, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. But they're, you know, they sort of tweak the model to suit their community. They follow, you know, everything else that we talk about with, when we describe an Impact 100 organization, but they really condense the time frame. And so there are things like that that happen around the nation that make each impact a little bit different and a little bit personal to that community.
Yeah. And so we can't, that there is an opportunity to real, and we'll put it at the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit about how to connect with you. You know, one of the ways that I introduced you is I said, you know, you were responsible for helping start an epidemic, and I think you continue to feed that epidemic of generosity. And as I was listening to you and doing some research about you, that term epidemic of generosity just really stuck with me. Can you tell me a little bit about what you mean by that and just kind of where that term came from and how you came up with it?
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, so there is one thing that you should know about generosity. It literally, biologically, is contagious. And studies have shown this. And so there's a lot of data that backs this up. So statistically, and we know there are always exceptions to this, but women actually are more generous than men statistically. But if women and men work together or live together, and women are vocal, you know, they share their involvement in the community, their generosity, be it time, talent, treasure, or ties, meaning sharing your network. All of those things are aspects of generosity that the data will show that the men in those kinds of communities will become more generous because of exposure to generous women. Now, the same thing is true in families. The number one indicator as to whether a child will grow up to be philanthropic is if it was behavior that was modeled for them when they were younger by someone that they value. So it could be a parent, but it also could be a neighbor. It could be an aunt or an uncle. It could be a teacher. So a coach. Having that behavior modeled, and what will really make it stick is if the individual who's modeling the behavior talks about it. So communicating helps in order to spread that. What happens when we give back is there is a biologic response. And so what happens is we exert oxytocin. And so to give a really basic example, let's just say that you and I are at the airport and we don't know each other. You and I are at the airport and I see you from across a crowded, busy airport help an elderly woman with her luggage or open the door for someone. I watch you do some act of kindness or generosity. When you do that, you yourself get a dose of oxytocin. And oxytocin is known as the trust or love hormone. It's the chemical that gets induced right after a woman gives birth, and it helps the bonding between mother and child. So when you are helpful or generous or kind to someone, you get a dose of oxytocin. The person to whom you're being kind, they get a dose of oxytocin. When your body gets oxytocin, our natural result, because it's good for us, is to want to do more. So when you feel good, you want to do it again. And when you do that act of kindness or generosity to someone else, they also want to do it. The other thing that happens is that if I don't even know either one of you and I witness that or I read about it, I get a dose of oxytocin. And what registers in my mind is, oh my gosh, next time I'm in that circumstance, I'm going to do what she did, mm-hmm. or I'm going to find new ways to be generous. And so in fact, generosity actually is contagious. And when we go about trying to spread the word, we end up spreading it like an epidemic spread.
Yeah.
What I've found is that there are so many people, women in particular, despite the statistics saying that we're more generous than men, women are less likely to write their own check. They're less likely to give to charity on their own, despite the fact that we own and control statistically more wealth, and that number is continuing to move, than our male counterparts. Men feel empowered, if you will, to write that check. Women really historically haven't. And so a lot of my work is trying to encourage women in particular, but men too, who don't see themselves as being able to give, having enough to give, is recasting the vision so they understand that they absolutely have more than enough to give.
And in many ways, Impact is a vehicle for that. And Impact, you know, like I said, it's one of those things where it is very empowering. And I can attest to the fact of the oxytocin that occurs on the grant days. So I know that it's a very, very powerful feeling that spread. You know, I know that you've taken some of the thoughts and ideas and the research and everything that you've done around generosity and through your organization, Generosity Matters. I know you're doing some work within organizations. Talk to me a little bit about, I mean, I can just already hear and see how this could be very, very powerful within an organization. Tell me a little bit about your work there and what you're seeing inside organizations and the power of generosity within organizations.
You know, it's interesting. That same oxytocin is also, because remember, that's the trust and the love hormone, as it's nicknamed. In the absence of oxytocin, and in most business environments, we have another chemical that's hard at work, and that's cortisol. Cortisol is your stress hormone. And interestingly, there's an inverse relationship between the two. And so if you're ever feeling stressed, by actually thinking about something good, thinking about how you could give to someone or help someone else will automatically lower the stress in your body, and it actually does work. Well, if you go into a business setting and you have a group of people that we often refer to the groups of people we work with as our team, and yet there are many dysfunctions in that team where there's not a lot of trust. Perhaps there's competition. It's a sales-based organization, and we're all competing toward the same goal to get the bigger deals and to get the higher incentives. And so we don't necessarily see each other as allies. And something interesting happens when we go and serve together. And so when teams of people, when groups of colleagues who are often not more than acquaintances come together toward a common good of helping someone else, whether it is a volunteer experience or whether it's raising money for a particular cause, or whether it's using the skills that they have within their work environment. In other words, a group of accountants going out and doing free tax return preparation for folks who couldn't afford to have their taxes done. It doesn't matter so much what the activity is or how your generosity is shown. But when colleagues who work together volunteer or behave generously together, you start building ties that weren't there before. Yeah. And another thing happens. You're more creative. More generous people have more creative ideas. They have a higher level of empathy, which makes sense because you're relating to other people, right? So your empathy would go up, which makes you more ethical. It also makes you more hopeful and optimistic for the future. when you take all those things in a work environment, it transforms the culture.
Yep.
It doesn't happen overnight, but it happens when the leadership of these organizations decide that it's important enough to invest and repeat the process so that everyone ends up getting on the same bus. And then you start to see transformation within organizations. Not only are they out doing great things in the community, which is terrific, of course, but the bottom line goes up, sales go up, and profits at the end end up going up based on the fact that people are working better together. They're more focused on their clients, be they an internal client of one of their colleagues or an external client. And the needle really gets moved on all the metrics that businesses measure when you build a culture of generosity within that organization. It's actually remarkable.
You know, just like you're talking about, I think it gives an opportunity in organizations if people have the freedom to express themselves. And much like you're doing with Impact 100, where, you know, an organization, an individual in the organization may not think that they can make a difference, but together they can make a bigger difference. And then, like you said, that teamwork and that sense of living your values and connecting with people beyond, you know, the transactional to really the heart makes a huge difference. And we know that. We know that in organizations. But people are a little afraid of that. They're a little afraid of those ideas. You know, it is powerful.
Yeah, they are. They are afraid. And often, you know, the companies that I would typically work with would be companies that are successful, of course, but too small to have their own kind of corporate social responsibility. Typically, they would be privately owned companies owned by a family or a small group of partners. And so the fear comes in that leadership team that they have particular values and that the company, therefore, has particular values. And the fear becomes, what if our employees don't share those values? Or worse, what if the behavior they have out in the community contradicts the values that we've established within the organization? And how do we allow our employees the freedom and flexibility to do some of this sort of work and yet still be certain that we're not going against the values and the brand that we've built for our company that are so personal to us as the owners or partners, leadership team in these organizations? And, so it can be scary because they feel like not only are they relinquishing a certain amount of control, which makes every strong leader a little nervous, but they also are very mindful that this first and foremost is a for-profit enterprise, and they're very worried that the sales will suffer or the bottom line will suffer. And, you know, you can talk data and show information about how that's not the case. But at some point, until they take the leap of faith, it can be a nail-biting time for those leaders, and which makes the relief that much sweeter when it comes through and they get results that far surpass what they expected. And they end up hearing from their employees at every level this amazing gratitude for the changes that have taken place in the workplace. Yeah. You know, everyone wants an engaged employee, but they're not quite sure how to get it. And this is one of those ways where literally everyone wins. The client wins, the employee wins, the owners of the company win, the community wins, and everybody gets better. That sort of spiraling effect of what happens when people are generous.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this to come in and to share the best of who they are and to be a part of something bigger than them, yet, you know, important to them individually as well as to our organizations and to communities. So, you know, I really appreciate the work you've done. I think it's just such an amazing story to take the idea scribbled on the back of a piece of paper on your spiral notebook and how you've turned this into truly an epidemic that is making such a huge, huge difference in our world. So I personally say thank you to that. Our community says thank you, because without that idea, there are many not-for-profits here in Pensacola that and across, I guess, the country, that would not be able to do the things they're doing. So we are grateful in gratitude for your generosity for doing that. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on your program. I'm a big fan of your work and a big fan of Pensacola. So it's terrific. I'm very grateful for the chance.
And Wendy, just so that everybody knows that there may be people listening that may want to get in touch with you regarding the Impact 100. Now, I have your generositymatters.com is your website, and that people can go there, and there is a button there for Impact 100. Is that the best way for people to find you and to find Impact 100?
That's a very easy way for them to find me. We also have another website called impact100global.org. And there is another, you know, it's very similar setup to my Generosity Matters website. But that will also talk about this upcoming conference, and it provides a database of the existing impact organizations as well as their contact information.
Right.
So that people who are interested can reach out that way as well.
That's phenomenal. Well, Wendy, again, thank you. I appreciate you being our guest today. And again, I appreciate all the good work that you're doing across the country. So next week, Julie Shepherd from IHMC will be joining us. IHMC is a organization here in Pensacola that works internationally and does some amazing work around innovation. They play down there with robots and creating all kinds of artificial intelligence. And so we're going to talk a little bit with her about the power of creativity, what it takes to create innovative teams that really break through a lot of new space and new ideas for moving our world forward. So Julie has some really great ideas and great thoughts with her team there at IHMC. Again, every week we're live at coredialogues.businessradiox.com, and that's dialogues with an S. If you miss the show, you can always listen to us and download the files at coredialogues.com, and you can go there, and that will also provide information about how to get in touch with all of our guests, including Wendy, and all of her information, so that you can get and stay connected with her. Again, thank you for joining us, and we really appreciate everyone's interest in this. And here we believe that conversation matters, and a good conversation, who knows what the great next idea will be, just like Wendy had. So have a great day, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week here at CoreDialoguesRadio.com. So thank you very much.